Hello, I'm Don Marsh, and welcome to St. Louis on the Air. The most important role we have as adults is that of parent. Unfortunately, it's one for which few of us are really trained. We pretty much raise our kids using our own parents as the model. But times have changed since our parents were bringing us up. Teaching right from wrong has changed. Spanking is generally frowned upon. But who wants a spoiled child? Should we really spare the rod? How can we maintain control, maintain the respect of our children, and our self-respect? Our guest on this program is an expert on the subject of parenting. Nancy Samelin is a parent, educator, and author who has written four books on parenting, including Loving Your Child is Not Enough, Positive Discipline That Works. She's here to appear at the Wilson School to discuss practical tips for positive parenting, and we'll start taking your calls on problems, challenges, and frustrations in just a couple of moments. Nancy, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
I'll let our audience know we'll give further details about your appearance at Wilson School a little later in the broadcast, but that's why you're here, and we're happy to have you.
Yes, and it's free and open to the community.
You know, that's even better. We love the word free. We just absolutely love it. Hey, what is positive parenting?
Well, I like to use the word positive discipline. Positive parenting is just kind of a general thing. You know, we all want to be positive instead of negative.
Sure.
But I never use the word discipline without using the word positive in front of it so people don't mix it up with punishment. Because sometimes discipline and punishment are synonymous in people's eyes.
I think in most people's minds.
Yeah. What that child needs is a good swat. You know, that's called discipline in some people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, although I'm not very knowledgeable about the Bible, I'm sorry to admit, but the disciple idea is the one of leading and teaching and guiding. And that's what we want to do. You know, when you punish somebody, and if you look at the definition of punish, it means to hurt or to inflict pain, you know, emotional or physical, you're not generally going to incur this kind of reaction from your child. You know, when you, even if you don't punish them by hitting them, you could say, this will teach you. You know, I warned you. It'll serve you right. Now you got what you deserved. That's, to me, very a punitive statement. It's saying, you know, I'm kind of glad you got hurt. What happens when you do that is your child doesn't say, you're absolutely right. I feel really badly. I'm full of remorse. They probably just hate you more than they did before you opened your mouth, which really wasn't your goal. Not that I'm saying one should be popular with their kids, but we'll get into that later.
Mm-hmm.
But if there were such a thing as a good punishment, and I'm not that comfortable with that word, so I substitute what may be a euphemism, which is consequence or penalty, it's when a child feels more remorse than revenge. Let me give you an example, because I'm full of examples. I really never use the word should. I try very hard not to tell parents what to do. I've been working with loving parents of delightful, obnoxious children for 25 years, parents of toddlers through teens. I feel like my job is to offer a lot of information, a lot of tips, a lot of skills, a lot of possibilities, but not to tell parents what to do. I think that's, we call that in New York chutzpah, which is a lot of nerve. Because I don't know your child, and I know that what works with Jonathan probably won't work with Jennifer, and what works on Tuesday may not work on Thursday. But you were right when you started by saying the only training we have for this incredibly difficult job is the fact that we had parents ourselves. And if you want to do it somewhat differently, you have no models, which was my case. I actually got into the field because I was such a rotten parent. I had my kids exactly a year apart a long time ago, and I discovered things about myself I had never known before.
Well, let me just stop you there and ask you why. I mean, what were you doing that made you in your own mind a rotten parent?
I was critical. I was impatient. I was angry. I nagged. I yelled. I bribed. I threatened. I pleaded. My communication skills were absolutely nil. And this was very humbling for someone who thought she was smart.
And this is the way your parents raised you?
My parents were quite critical. I mean, they were responsible people, and they loved me. But I wanted to be different, and certainly I wanted not to be so critical.
And, of course, they were bringing you up the way they had been brought up themselves.
Goes from one generation to the next.
It goes all the way back. Well, continue. I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead with it.
No, that's a good question.
Yeah.
And our parents were very powerful teachers. We've got those tapes in our heads. So some parents go to the other extreme. You know, if they had very, very strict authoritarian, because I said so, you do it, you know, who dare you parents, they become too permissive. Or we just emulate what those tapes are in our heads. Now, I was really upset because I wanted to be this patient, loving, gentle, caring mother who also set limits and, you know, who knew what to say, and my kids would be happy and they'd love one another and they'd love me. Well, you know, they had never read that script, and they weren't the little angels.
So you knew that you were actually on the wrong path with all of this, but you couldn't change it until you changed it?
Well, I wake up every morning and say, today I'm not going to yell, nag, bribe, plead, threaten, criticize, argue, or punish, but it didn't take me long to...
Right.
You know, one would be hitting the other, they'd be dawdling, one would knock the milk over, and I would say things. Now, here's what I talk about in all my books, and the newest one is Loving Without Spoiling. The way we speak to the people who we care the most about is often the least careful and the least caring. Now, Don, I just met you, so I probably wouldn't say some of the things that I and many other parents have said with good intentions to their kids. Don, what is the matter with you? Sit up straight. Keep your hands to yourself. Why are you always doing that? If you do that one more time, you're going to be sorry. You are a slob. You'll never learn.
You sound just like my mother. No, but I understand what you're saying. But most of the time when parents are talking this way, it's because they're angry. Something has happened that has, quote, angered them. And anger management, I suppose, is a key part of all of this.
Well, as I was telling some of the parents from Wilson last night, we had a lovely dinner. I was saying, you know, I wrote Loving Your Child Is Not Enough. That's sort of my classic. It's been out for a long time. And it was such hard work. I said, I'm never going to write another book. But, you know, intentions. I realized that I had not talked enough in my first book about probably the most important and scary thing about being a parent, and that is anger. So eventually I wrote another book called Love and Anger, The Parental Dilemma. And here's the goal of that. First of all, I want parents to feel less angry about what is inevitable. These kids whom we love, and I've been dealing with parents for 25 years, I've never met a parent who doesn't love his or her child and who doesn't want to be the best parent they can be. You know, nobody gets up in the morning and says, sure, you know, today I'm going to say horrible things to my kid. But children are very irritating. Children are very wearing. Children have a different agenda. When you're in a hurry, they're not. When you need a nap, they're wired. When you want a clean house, they want to make a mess. Not because they're little monsters, but because that's the nature of a child. A child is mired in the present. They're impulsive. I mean, it's adorable to see some of the spontaneous things that a child does, except when you're in a hurry and you're trying to get them going, you're trying to get in the tub and out of the tub and all that maintenance stuff. So being angry is a very basic, well, it's inevitable. So here's the goal. Not only is it, since it's inevitable, stop feeling guilty about it, but more important, how can you express the anger without hurting your child or somebody you love? Because a lot of this applies to people of all ages.
Okay, I'll bite. How?
Well, when you express anger, there are certain words you usually use beside the tone of your voice, which you just heard. And here are some red flag words, and I'm sure I'm going to talk about them at Wilson School tonight, because the neat thing about this approach is it's very easy to understand. And it, you know, it's not rocket science. It's hard to do, but it makes good psychological sense. Take the simple word you plus something negative. You're impossible. You're a slob. You're driving me to drink. You'll never learn. You're a spoiled brat. You're such a... Anyway, you're just like your Aunt Eileen. You know how she turned out. You say these things out of anger, and there are two problems. One, you're not helping your child's self-esteem by telling him what a, you know, screw-up he is. I don't know if I mean that. I hope I can use that word on the air. The other
Feel
one...
Feel free.
I amended it a little bit. The other problem is that it doesn't work. And I think, as a parent, we need to look at what are we doing? If what we're doing over and over again, take nagging, isn't working, we have a choice. We can keep doing it, hoping if we do it long enough, it might, which it won't. Or we can say, hey, you know, this isn't working. What else can I do? There must be something else I can do. And there always is. So here, get back to you. You plus something negative is one way that we express anger. What can you do instead? Talk about yourself. Keep it short. I'm angry, I'm furious, I won't be spoken to like that. Or just state the rule. There will be no hitting. Seat belts. Homework before TV. You don't have to say. You never do your homework. Your brother does his homework. How many times do I have to tell you do your homework? If you don't do your homework, you're never going to get into college. If you don't get into college, you're going to, you know, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, you have to remember that if you talk too long with kids, that's beyond the first sentence. They've tuned you out anyway because you are excruciatingly boring to your kids.
But it is interesting. I can think back, and I'll bet you can too, to times when you were growing up when things like you've just described were said to you that you can still remember. I'm older than you are, but I can remember things that happened 55, 60 years ago that were said to me by a parent in anger. And I've never quite gotten beyond that in a sense.
Don, what you're saying is so important. You know, I hope everybody's taking this in because this is the awesome kind of guilt-provoking part of being a parent. We are mirrors for our children. And, you know, what I'm talking about is so easy when you have an easy child and he's doing what you want and you're proud of him and, you know, everything coming home with A's and he's agreeable and he's polite and blah, blah, blah. Well, that's not the way most kids are. Most kids are pretty challenging. So when you have a child who is not living up to your expectations or who's giving you a hard time, and I had two of them, partially because of the way I handle them, you look in their eyes or you say something, even a statement like, "What is the matter with you?" And what you're saying to this child is you're holding up a mirror which says, "I really am disappointed. You're not what I want you to be." That's heavy stuff. That is, you know, we were talking about punishment before. That's not exactly punishment, but it's powerful criticism that we don't want children to internalize. You know, I think criticism is like comes down from one generation to the next. It's like a little bit of poison, and it never works. It doesn't work with spouses. It doesn't work with mothers. It doesn't work with mothers-in-law. You know, if you say, "Ugh, you're impossible," first of all, nobody knows what you're talking about. And second of all, that person, if it's a spouse, for example, is not going to say, "Oh, well, thank you for bringing that to my attention. You know, I'm really going to pick up my socks from the floor." It would be better to say your socks are on the floor.
You've raised a great many issues I want to get into, but we have to take the first of our two breaks, so let's do that now. Nancy Samlin, we're talking about parenting, positive parenting, and positive discipline, if you will. And we'll come back and be taking your call shortly, but I have a few more questions for Nancy. We'll do that when we come back. This is St. Louis on the Air, 90.7 KWMU. Nancy Samlin is our guest. We're talking about parenting and a couple of housekeeping things to get out of the way. Number one, you have a website that you want to be sure that everybody knows how to get to because you have a lot of useful information there. So why don't you give us that, Nancy?
It's just samlin.com, which is S-A-M-A-L-I-N. And there is a lot of information, short articles, you know, workshop information.
Sure. We obviously are not going to get to everything that could be talked about, even though we do have an hour today. And to point out once again that you're appearing at the Wilson School this evening. And for those who don't know, that's at 400 De Munn. I will also point out that on our website, kwmu.org, we have a link to the Wilson School website and all the information about tonight's appearance at 7 o'clock is available there. And as you heard at the outset, it's free, which is even good news. So you have to call, though, to reserve a place. Is that correct?
You can actually RSVP. Online.
You can RSVP online. So there it is. It's right on our website for the Wilson School and for tonight's appearance by Nancy Samlin. Getting back to what we were talking about right before the break, I think the word that comes to mind as I was listening to you is respect. And it's mutual respect. I mean, that's what you want. Your kids, if they respect you, are more likely to do as they are told, if you will. Mm-hmm. And you want to be sure that they do maintain that respect. And you have your self-respect.
Well, you know, we hear this all the time these days, and it's true. Kids have no respect these days. In my day, you know, kids were more respectful. Well, you know, that's a euphemism for fear. You know, no. My mother would kill me if I. So, you know, respect is a wonderful word. It's really hard to put that into action. I think it's easier to just think in terms of what is coming out of my mouth? How am I speaking to this person? And Is it working? Because sometimes a parent will say to me, you know, I tell my kid over and over to remember to take, in this case, I do workshops for parents. Yesterday it was, he's always forgetting his inhaler for
asthma.
Mm-hmm. So this kid is 13, and she's been reminding him since he was 2. And she says, he's always forgetting. I always have to remind him. I tell him 100 times a day. So my question is always, is it working? So you could see by the expression on her face, well, obviously it's not. You know, it's like spanking if you did it once and it wasn't working, great. So the idea is, what else can she do? It's not working. All it's doing is, you know, when you nag somebody, they want to do just the opposite. That's true of people of all ages. So what this parent is doing is she is telling me that she's a very responsible parent. So he doesn't have to be a responsible kid. I said, what would happen if you didn't wake him up in the morning? She said, well, I don't know. I always wake him up. So I said, well, what would happen if you didn't wake him up? He'd be late for school. And what would happen if he was late for school? You know, you can see where this is going, mm-hmm. right? I don't mm-hmm. have to sure. elaborate it. But if a child is late for school, there are consequences. And they're a lot more powerful than our nattering on and on and on, hurry up, wake up, you're going to be late, you're going to be late. I remember with my kids, it was cold. I live in New York, just like it's cold today in St. Louis. And, you know, getting the boots and the jackets and the hats and the gloves and the nagging and button your jacket and it was not fun. I mean, mornings between 7 and 8 in most American homes, parents are saying, hurry up, come on, at least 50 times, at which point kids are slowing down. I had a nephew. I was much better equipped with my nephew. I'd pick him up at daycare when he was 2 or 3, and he didn't want to put on his jacket, he didn't want to put on his hat, he didn't want to put on his mittens. Well, I had a little shopping bag. I put all that stuff in the shopping bag. As soon as we got out, he was cold, so he put on his hat, he put on his gloves, and he put on his jacket. So, you know, sometimes less is more. Kids really get the message. And it's very irritating to tell kids what they already know, because they're going to tune us out anyway.
Let me go back to the inhaler and the asthma and the consequences. How was that resolved? Just simply tell
them. Well, I'm going to see her next week.
so you don't know how. But, I mean, what were you basically suggesting, that the child forget the inhaler and the consequences being that it would need it and therefore would remember to take it next time?
I don't think she's ready for that.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a workshop, so there were other parents, mm-hmm. and they had a lot of ideas, and one of them was just put a little Post-it on the door, inhaler. A lot easier than having to hear your mother say it over and over. I asked her if what would happen if he didn't take the inhaler, because he has very moderate to mild asthma. And she said, I don't know, it's never happened. I said, well, you know, I'm not taking responsibility here. Ask your pediatrician. Is this something that where he's in danger? And if he is, then she probably is going to keep reminding him. But she's not encouraging her son to be responsible or to take any responsibility. Probably a better example than an inhaler would be homework. Your kid forgets his homework. What are you going to do? Run to school with it? Well, you might.
But you know, then the child runs to school and the teacher chews him out doing exactly the kinds of things that you're saying
right.
shouldn't be done.
And I would hope that when that child comes home and says, I forgot my homework and the teacher yelled at me, that you don't start yelling, but you say, well, that must have been pretty unpleasant. I bet that wasn't any fun.
Next time, better do that homework.
Tomorrow's another day.
Yeah. I want to go back. I interrupted you at one point early on when I asked you how you overcame the problem you had as a parent, in which you were vocal and had that tone of voice that you thought made you a, quote, bad parent.
Well, believe me, I was. And I was one of the reasons I went into this field is because I have a lot of empathy for how tough the job is, because I wasn't worried about where the next meal was coming from. I have a healthy marriage. I had 2 relatively healthy kids, and I didn't have clue one on how to discipline them, how to talk to them, how to be patient and uncritical.
That's every parent, Nancy. Yeah. Every parent.
Right. So here's the most important job we have.
Right.
And we have no skills. So I've kind of seen my job as offering a lot of skill in addition to love and good intentions. How did I get over it? It's gradual. Believe me, I didn't always practice what I preached. What was nice, though, when I learned some alternatives to doing what came naturally, you know, yelling, nagging, bribing, etc., I at least had a modus operandi so I could say, okay, I blew that one, but here's what I did, here's what I can do differently next time. I used to say to my son, I mean, my IQ really got very low when I became a parent. Watch out, you're going to spill the milk. What do you think happened in the next 30 seconds?
Spilled milk.
Right. Now, you would think that somebody with a relatively decent IQ or even a minimal IQ would think, hey, why am I saying this? I'm just encouraging him to spill the milk. It would have been better if I'd put the milk out of reach or given him a smaller amount or, you know.
A tumble-free glass.
Something like that.
These things that a spill-free cup.
But, you know, that was kind of these predictions, which kids kind of have to test you on. But it was the idea of, okay, this isn't working. What else can I do? Here's a skill that I didn't know at all that is so powerful, and that's the power of acknowledging feelings. This approach is not permissive. It's not authoritarian either. It's authoritative. Kids need limits. They need positive discipline. They need structure, etc. They need respect when we can give it to them. However, we need to be permissive with feelings and strict with behavior, by which I mean if a child expresses jealousy, anger, rage, humiliation, disappointment, fear, we need not to make them feel badly about that because they can't help it. So when your child says, you know, I hate my sister, she's such a pain, our parents might very well have said, you don't hate your sister. That's ridiculous. You have to love your sister. Well, you hated her just as much as you did before, but you've said to yourself, well, my parents don't get it, or I'm just not going to say that again. Or I'm scared of the dark. What do you mean you're scared of the dark? Don, you're 7 years old. There's nothing to be scared of. I'll give you something to cry about. This is not called acknowledging feelings.
Yeah.
Now, when someone you love is upset or complaining, it's much more helpful to talk to their heart than their head. We talk to their head because we, with good intentions, we don't want someone we love to be upset. So your child comes home from school and he says, I hate school, I hate my teacher. So we want to reassure him, so we say, we deny it. Oh, John, you don't hate school. You go to a very nice school. Or my son used to come home every day and say that. I hate school, I hate my teacher. And because I was ignorant, ignorance is not bliss, I would say what was normal. Eric, you don't hate school, you go to a very nice school, your teacher is not bad, what did you do today? If I was annoyed at him, which I often was. And one day I said something to him that was really loving and helpful. Eric, you know how much that school costs? At that point he was going to an independent school. So he'd come home hating his teacher, and then he'd come home and he'd feel the same way about me, not because I didn't love him, but because I didn't understand, because I was making him feel badly about something that he felt badly about already. You know, that was the example with the homework. Your kid comes home and you don't say, well, it serves you right. You say, that was not a fun experience. I bet you can do something about it tomorrow.
But the question of being strict with regard to behavior is quite something different.
Right. For instance, it's okay to wish your sister had never been born. It's not okay to sit on her. It's not okay to give her a kiss and end up in a stranglehold. You can hate school, but you still have to go. How can I make this easier for you? I know this isn't easy. I bet you wish today was Saturday. The dark can be scary. I know. Sometimes all you have to say is, I know.
Okay, so I sit on my sister. What next? What do you, the parent, do?
Well, if you have a three-year-old, you don't leave her alone with any child under two, because two and three-year-olds have no impulse control.
Sure.
So very often what starts out as a hug ends up as a stranglehold. So you try to make sure they don't end up in the emergency room. You don't leave them alone. you make a rule, which is not easy to enforce, but the statement is there will be no hurting.
But if they do it, what?
Well, it depends on the age of the child. Depends on the situation. You know, these what-if questions are reasonable, but you can give them a timeout. You could separate them. Sometimes one of the things that nobody ever thinks of is to comfort the hurtee, which is not what the hurter wants. You pick up the little one and you say, oh, that really must have hurt.
But then mommy loves Johnny more.
That's... Well, mommy is not saying to the three-year-old, now you leave your sister alone. What is the matter with you? You keep your hands to yourself. She's just picking up the little one and she's saying, boy, that really hurt.
But the other one is going to say she loves the other one more.
Now look, kids, the refrain that comes with every sibling, and sometimes without even having a sibling, of every child is, it's not fair.
Every kid says that about everything.
Now, what did our parents say? Life isn't fair.
That's right.
Like we cared about that sociological inequality. So you could say, I know.
Nancy Sam was our guest with lots to talk about. We want to get the listening audience in on this. I've monopolized it too long. Our phone number, 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can email us at talk@kwmu.org. So come on in and have your questions. How are you frustrated? Nancy can perhaps help you out of your particular pickle at the moment. Let me start here with an email that we've just received. Spencer from Belleville sends this one to us. It says, I have twins. One of them misbehaves more than the other. We try to use praise when he's doing the right thing, but don't want his sister to feel neglected when we are doing this, especially if she isn't necessarily misbehaving. Should we equally praise both children when only one of them is doing the right thing?
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah. And any special advice for parents of multiples? And we only have 30 minutes left.
Yeah, and kids are always comparing. And they see everything in terms of themselves. So, first of all, let me answer that question a little by backing up a little. There are helpful ways to praise and less helpful ways to praise. And one is descriptive. You could say, I like the way you handled that, or I like the way you helped your sister, or I appreciate, or, you know, I noticed you were about to hit your sister and you used your words. Wow. That is not threatening, and it's also very clear. But when you say to a child, oh, you're so wonderful, you're so helpful, you're so thoughtful, you're so honest, never say to a child, you're so honest, because no child is always honest. But when you say that, that's threatening to both of them, because it's a hard thing to live up to. So when you praise, try to be, somebody very wise once said, praise the poem, not the poet. You wouldn't say to Picasso, you're such a great painter. But you might say, oh, I was so moved by the painting about the Civil War. Same thing with a child. By describing the behavior, a child knows exactly what you're saying. And you can also use these expressions like, I noticed, I admired. Now, what will happen very often is when you, even if you praise in a helpful way, and I talk about this a lot in both Loving Your Child and Loving Without Spoiling, the other one might say, what, you don't think I'm, you know, of course, we're not using that adjective good, which is useless, but I really like the way you helped me set the table. Now, a child might hear, oh, so are you saying you don't like the way I, you know, that I don't set the table? And I might just say, I'm talking to your sister. Look, an unhappy child is not an unloved child. It's okay if... once in a while, one of her nose is out of joint. I mean, this is not. I like the fact that this father is careful about how he's talking, but you know he can relax a little too because this is not terrible what he's doing.
And they are different people, little people. I mean, they are different.
They are, and your children are always very different from one another, and that's what makes it complicated too, because you know.
We're going to have to take another break in just a moment, but let me ask this question quickly before we do, and that is, are we, do you feel today, too permissive with the kids? I mean, do we spoil them? Which seems to me that so many parents are giving kids everything they want, the expensive video games and everything they want. Do you see
that? The answer is yes. I do think there are a lot more spoiled kids, and it's because parents have a real hard time saying no. I think you've got a problem if you want your child to always love you and be happy. That's why I'm glad you reminded me of that statement, an unloved, an unhappy child is not an unloved child. But it may be, he may be a child who hasn't gotten what he wants. Also remind me, since we have to take a break, about talking about the difference between wants and needs.
Say that right now, because we have 1 minute before we
Parents
need to
Parents need to know. They need to be thinking about this often, especially we have the holidays coming up. Ugh. There's a big difference between what a child wants and what a child needs, and that child has no idea of the difference. And that's why he says, I got to have it, I got to have it, I'll die if you don't let me. Everybody has it. A child needs love. He needs limits. He needs enough clothing to wear and enough food, schooling, you know, stuff like that. He doesn't need any more toys. He has too many toys. He can't even clean up his room because he's so loaded with them. And those toys are not going to make him any happier.
Another thing that I've heard is that every child needs rules. They need to know
yes.
what the rules are, and they actually welcome that.
Right. Not too many, but very clear, very specific rules.
Let's take our break now. We're talking with Nancy Samlin, parenting expert, and we'll come back and take your calls when we do so. This is St. Louis on the Air, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again. Welcome back to St. Louis on the Air. We will continue our conversation with Nancy Samlin, and we'll start with your phone calls now, and we'll begin with Kathy, who's calling from Overland. Kathy, thank you so much for being with us. You're on the air.
Fortunately, caught the tail end of the conversation with the child and the inhaler. My problem is with my teenage son and homework. He doesn't do it. He doesn't turn it in. If he does do it, I've been trying to sort of not do the nagging concept. And the progress reports are I'm probably coming out today or tomorrow, and I know he's got at least two Fs on his progress report because he hasn't bothered to do his homework and turn it in and that kind of thing. Where can I go from here?
How old is your son?
13.
13. Is he interested in anything at school?
He's interested in the sports, and, you know, they do weightlifting in the mornings before school starts and gym class, and that's about it. Everything else is either stupid or, you know, other adjectives along that line.
So there are no courses in which your son does well? Are you saying he's going to fail more than... Is he failing across the board?
Well, he has always said he enjoys math and science, and those happen to be the two that he's failing. So I'm not sure why he's failing if those are the two subjects he seems to enjoy. You know, there's a correlation here that I'm not getting.
Well, I'm sure you've asked him. What has he said?
Getting more than a monosyllable response from him is sometimes challenging. He says he doesn't get it, but then when he brings it home, when he does bring his homework home, he breezes through it and gets it done, and he hardly asks any questions of us.
Let me tell you something about helping kids with homework, because I wouldn't say this if I weren't a parent myself, and you're probably not going to like my answer, but I think you have to be a mixture of Job and Mary Poppins to help your child with homework without getting mad.
Okay.
I couldn't do it. I was a teacher for 14 years, and I couldn't help my own kids because as soon as I said to Todd, my younger one, Todd, you have to sit down and sit in your chair, or he would say something to me. He'd even ask me to help him once in a rare while, and I'd start to help him, quote, unquote, and he would say, you have to test me in order, or that's not going to be on the test. Or he'd roll his eyes when I suggested that he maybe write this word differently. And I found that I was a terrible teacher for my own child. I could help your child. You could probably help your neighbor's child. But we say things to our kids that get us in the trap of turning it into a critical session. And then they get mad at us instead of at themselves. The other thing is that homework is an example of an autonomy issue where, you know, it's his homework. And he would be happy to hand it over to you and then get mad at you. Now, there is a problem because he seems to really dislike school and not seem to be interested in anything. And the two subjects you mentioned that he is interested in, he's doing poorly. So there is some detective work that needs to be done, and I would start with the school. What have the teachers said?
Well, the teachers say that he pays attention in class because I am in constant contact with the teachers. I email them. They email me at least once a week. They say that he seems to pay attention. He, you know, he gets it when he's in class. He seems to get it. He does his work when he's in class. He just doesn't bring it home to finish it.
Uh-huh.
And then he's like, well, they don't give us enough time in class to finish it. And it's like, well, honey, that's why it's called homework.
Well, here's my... unfortunately, I can't give you a complete answer because I don't know you and I don't know your son. I will give you my website, which is samelin.com, and you can send me an email, and I'm happy to go into it at greater length.
I could take an hour right now without a problem. So what was that again? Could you spell it?
It's my website is samelin.com, S-A-M-A-L-I-N. And I can also recommend some books about homework. You know, this is really hard. My only advice to you, which I think applies to every parent out there who's listening, is if you're doing something as a parent over and over and over and it's not working, then you have a choice of continuing, even though it's not working, hoping that if you do it long enough it will, or doing something else.
Well,
so we
got
to work on the something else.
Yeah, I've tried. I've talked with the principal. I've talked with his counselor. They're both interceding for me because I told them I'm tired of nagging. It's not getting me anywhere.
Let me just propose that you contact Nancy on the website, because we have a number of other people who want to get in on this, and we certainly understand your problem, and I think that Nancy would be more than willing to go into more detail with you. Thank you so much for calling.
I certainly would, Kathy.
Thank you for calling. Let's go to Reese now, calling from Crestwood. Reese, are you with us? Go ahead.
Yes. Don, thanks for having the topic, and Nancy, thanks for visiting. You'd mentioned just briefly earlier that you weren't too familiar with the Bible. And I would just encourage you to maybe look into it, because I think when I read the Bible, I see similarities between what it says and some of the concepts you're talking about. You know, people, you always hear about spare the rod, spoil the child. But also, it says don't exasperate your children. And I think it recognizes the balance that needs to be there, which, you know, I'm hearing similar concepts.
But it also says, Reese, an eye for an eye, so we can take this down a very long path. But thank you so much for calling. I believe we get the gist of what you're saying. Sure, you can find examples in the Bible, I think, for virtually any direction you want to take, don't you think, Nancy?
I absolutely do, and thank you for that call.
But he did mention spare the rod. What about the rod?
I mean, spanking
is the issue that is going to really light up this
board.
Not that we need it.
This is one part of the Bible that I have studied, and I've referred it to other people who know the Bible a lot more than I do. And that is a misused quote, because what that rod was to lead the sheep, not to beat them. And actually, I have a colleague who went to Romania and saw sheep herders with these rods, and they were not beating the sheep. They were leading them. There's a big difference between beating a sheep and leading a sheep.
Thy rod and thy staff shall comfort me.
Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
I know that one, too.
Yeah, well,
I forgot about that.
It's one that I know. We have an email. I think you still have it over there from a gentleman by the name of Meisner about, you want to just lift anything from that with regard to spanking? He said, as I recall, it's been a while since I read it, that spanking is actually hitting. And that it should be remembered that that's exactly what's going on, that spanking a child in public strips away the dignity of the child, et cetera, et cetera. You're very much anti-spanking.
Well, I am, and I don't think that if a parent occasionally hits the child, he's necessarily a bad parent, but it's certainly something I would discourage. And I have a problem with it. Not only does it not work, but it hurts. You know, I mean, we don't hit a child and, you know, not to hurt them a little bit. And then, of course, if they are there defiant, we may want to hit them a little more because we've lost it. But be that as it may, the problem I have with spanking is that children don't always listen to us. In fact, they don't listen to us very often, but they watch us. And there's a famous cartoon which shows a father with a five-year-old over his knee, and he's whacking her behind. And as he's hitting her, he's saying, "This will teach you to hit your baby brother." And, you know, you can see when kids play with their toys and they're hitting the doll or the dog, they're saying the same thing with bad dog, bad girl. Now, that is not helping them to change their behavior. And you know, I think there's a rule that you a law that you can't beat up prisoners, even if, though they've been accused of crimes. When somebody is hitting you to teach you how to be a good person, your feelings of wanting to change your behavior are probably minimal.
But I'll bet you a very large percentage of the people listening to this program or who are out there not listening to the program would say, well, a spanking sure corrected me. One swat on the backside and from Dad, and I knew that I was not to do that again.
Oh, listen, I'm not going to argue with them. If that's the way they feel, that's not for me to deny what they're saying. But a child who is frequently hit is a child who's going to avoid you, and a child who is not usually very filled with remorse. The other thing is when, you know, I've heard this a million times, well, I was spanked and I turned out fine.
Right.
And I suspect it wasn't just because of the spanking. It was because of the loving.
And people who are spanked or abused, if you will, to take it to an extreme, generally grow up to be spankers and abusers. I think that's fairly well documented.
Well, there's the modeling part. Yeah. That's the problem.
Right. Back to the phones now. Yanni has been very patient, calling from St. Louis. Yanni, thanks for waiting, and you're on the air.
Hi. I honestly don't really have a specific question, but I just wanted to put a point out there. I have three kids, and all of them are great kids. They have straight A's in school. They're extremely athletic, and they're very helping to every single person in their school and they're around the house. I mean, they are really good kids. But at the same point, like you were saying, that using the you language and the other things, I do those things to them, but I don't think it is causing any adverse effect on them. And just like what you were saying, that, yeah, in the last generations, there was a lot of spanking and a lot of hitting and more commanding rather than, like, you know, trying to work your way around them. And I don't think the last generations or any generations have really failed us. Every generation is getting better and better. The times change and the kids change accordingly. So I really don't know what's such a big point of being... like, you know, the discipline is fine, but at the same point, I really, honestly, in a sense, I don't really agree with your point that it's such a big deal not to treat them bad. It's okay. I think it's okay to treat them bad once in a while just for them to understand that they have really hurt their parents.
All right, Yanni, thanks so much for the call. We'll have Nancy respond to that.
All right.
What do you mean by treat them bad? Can you give me an example?
I think maybe we've lost her.
Oh,
I'm sorry about that. We cut her off. I don't know specifically, obviously, what she was talking about.
I was a bit confused.
I apologize to Yanni and to you for not allowing her to follow through there. Let's continue on with the phone calls, however, and pick up with Marion calling from St. Louis.
Excuse me. I just want to share with you, you're the speaker who has been most interesting. I'm a grandma now, and. When my son was about 13 or 14, or maybe younger, I said, oh, you realize how long it's been since I've had to punish you? And he said, you know why, don't you? And I said, no, why? He said, because you're maturing. I like even at this age that he's in now, I always like to remind him of that because he is a wonderful father, and he has three wonderful children, and I guess I did something right. I don't know.
Well, I love that story. And if you want to email that to me through my website, samhlin.com, I will share it with other parents because that says something wonderful about you. We were talking about mutual respect.
Mm-hmm.
Even you're asking him and you're stating that to him. You know, I haven't had to do that for a long time. It sounds to me like you also have a sense of humor. And, you know, if I could give everybody a humor pill, that would help. We need to lighten up sometimes and not take everything so seriously.
Susan, thank you so much for the call. Nancy, it does bring to mind the whole issue of grandparents getting in on this, though, because sometimes there can be conflicts, if you will, that the grandparents might see the role of discipline a little bit differently than the parents.
Well, you know, criticism is poison between generations. And I know a lot of grandparents, and I don't blame them. I agree with them sometimes, who are not happy with the way their children are raising the grandchildren. But it's very hard for parents, the parents I work with, for example, to hear the kind of criticism that sometimes they get from their parents. And what I like to see in grandparents, I think grandparents are a gift to a child. if it's a non-critical grandparent, a parent who enjoys, a grandparent has the right, as far as I'm concerned, to spoil your children and then give them back when they're tired. I'm not talking about spoiling with candy, but let me just give you a quick example. This little boy said to his mother, "You know why I love being with Grandpa?" And she said, "No." He said, "Because he's never in a hurry." And I think this unconditional love is much easier from a grandparent. And I think I say to parents, look, your job is not that of a grandparent. Your job is to make your children unhappy sometimes.
The time is starting to get away from us a little bit, but how about the grandparent who does interfere? I mean, how does the parent handle that? Do you have any quick advice?
Unfortunately, it's not quick. I do have some stories about that in Loving Without Spoiling, because it's very hard for a parent to be criticized by her mother or father about the way he or she is raising their children, and they usually don't take it with a grain of salt. So I say, you know, unless your mother or father is terribly critical, leave them alone with your kids and go to the movies and let them do their thing. And I do encourage grandparents to try not to be too critical, but to, if they want to inculcate some of those values that they feel their kids are not doing with the grandchildren. Grandparents have a huge influence over grandchildren and a wonderful gift to children.
Because they're not in a hurry. Let's take one more phone call. Let's go to Susan. She's calling from University City. Susan, go ahead, please. We're running short on time, so if you could make it a little bit on the quick side, we'd appreciate it.
Okay. My question is, one of my dilemmas recently as a parent is how to help my child, who's a little boy, 9 years old, deal with bullying and disrespect that he sees going on between other children and to him. He has been brought up to be nice to people, to use his manners, and he's struggling with this. And, you know, I don't want to give him the advice, well, you go ahead and you hit that kid back. Or
mm-hmm. It's a very, very important issue and a very serious issue.
I will take my reply off the air.
Thank you. Go ahead.
And I would also encourage this parent to email me through my website.
Uh-huh. We have time if you want to respond.
Because
to her.
There are some wonderful books on this.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite is called Easing the Teasing. It's by someone named Judy Friedman, Freedman, because it's got wonderful advice, not just for parents, but for kids. Ways to answer kids who say mean things to you. And kids can be really mean. There's one of the things that's really hard, because every kid goes to school not thinking about math or that test necessarily, but how do I look? How are the kids seeing me? What are they thinking of me? And it gets more intense as they get older. That's what's on their mind. Very hard to go against the group. Whenever your child stands up for another kid, for example, who is, they hear some, you know, a kid being teased, and they have the courage to say, well, he's not such a bad kid, or I think we should leave him alone. That child needs a huge amount of praise from you, because that takes a lot of guts. And that's what you need to say to your child, not how could you, you know, go along with the crowd.
We have to stop it at that point. Nancy Samlin, thank you so much for being with us. Let's repeat once again that your website for answers to many of the questions we didn't get to or couldn't answer completely today is samlin.com, samalin.com. And with regard to your appearance at 7 o'clock tonight at the Wilson School over on Des Moines, I want to be sure that I understand what people have to do to reserve a seat. They can do it online. Is it to at the Wilson School?
Wilson School Speaker at Yahoo.
Wilson School Speaker at Yahoo. .com. That is how you can reserve a seat to listen to Nancy Samlin tonight. Thank you so much for being with us. I wish we had another hour, because I've got many more questions, but we'll have
I
to reserve
it.
That for next time.
Thank you. I hope we can do it again.
Nancy Samlin, our guest on St. Louis on the Air. Tomorrow, join Steve Potter for Cityscape, when he'll talk about the Repertory Theater of St. Louis's production of Urinetown, the musical, and the St. Louis Wind Symphony. Monday on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about the latest research on drugs to treat Alzheimer's disease. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs can be streamed, downloaded, or downloaded for podcast at kwmu.org. St. Louis on the Air is produced by Mary Edwards and engineered by Alan Dorr and Robert Altman, with production assistance from Spencer Reed. The executive producer is Mike Schrand. St. Louis on the Air is a production of 90.7 KWMU. Thanks for listening. I'm Don Marsh.